So today we will be discussing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, Text 43. Chapter 14 of the Srimad Bhagavatam is titled as The Story of King Vena. So we are almost at the end of this particular chapter. There is just, I think, probably a couple of more verses before it comes to Maharaj Prithu. Pretty interesting section. Let's focus on text 43 for today. Text 43 goes as follows.
Vinishchityaivam rishayo.
Vinishchityaivam
rishayo.
Vinishchityaivam rishayo.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Mamanthur urum tarasa.
Mamanthur urum tarasa.
Mamanthur urum tarasa.
Manthurum tarasa.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Vinischityaivam rishayo.
Vinischityaivam rishayo.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Mamanthururum tarasa.
Mamanthururum tarasa.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Vinischityaivam rishayo. Vipannasya mahipate.
Vipannasya mahipate.
Mamanthur urum tarasa.
Mamanthur urum tarasa.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Tatrasit bahuko naraha.
Nischitya.
Nischitya.
Deciding.
Deciding.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus,
Rishayaha,
Rishayaha,
the great sages,
the great sages.
Vipannasya,
Vipannasya,
dead,
dead.
Mahipate,
Mahipate,
of the king,
of the king.
Mamanthu,
Mamanthu,
churned,
churned.
Urum,
Urum,
the thighs,
the thighs.
Tarasa,
Tarasa,
with specific power,
with specific power.
Tatra,
Tatra,
thereupon,
thereupon.
Asit,
Asit
was born.
Was born.
Bahuka.
Bahuka.
Of the name Bahuka. Dwarf.
Name Bahuka.
Dwarf.
Dwarf.
Naraha.
Naraha.
A person.
A person.
Translation. After making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force and according to a specific method. As a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. Purpose: that a person was born by the churning of the thighs of King Vena proves that the spirit soul is individual and separate from the body. The great sages and saintly persons could beget another person from the body of the dead King Vena, but it was not possible for them to bring King Vena back to life. King Vena was gone, and certainly he had taken another body. The saintly persons and sages were only concerned with the body of Vena, because it was a result of the seminal succession in the family of Maharaj Dhruva. Consequently, the ingredients by which another body could be produced were there in the body of King Vena. By a certain process, when the thighs of the dead body were churned, another body came out. Although dead, the body of King Vena was preserved by drugs and mantras chanted by King Vena's mother. In this way, the ingredients for the production of another body were there. When the body of the person named Bahuka came out of the dead body of King Vena, it was really not very astonishing. It was simply a question of knowing how to do it. From the semen of one body, another body is produced, and the life symptoms are visible due to the souls taking shelter of this body. One should not think that it was impossible for another body to come out of the dead body of Maharaj Vena. This was performed by the skillful action of the sages. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachanam Pangum Gangayate Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Vinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Narayanam Namaskritya
Narayanam
Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Naso Jayamudhiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nishyam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavatir Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devati Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Vinishchityaivam Rishayo Vipannasya Mahipate Mamantur Urum Tarasa Tatrasid Bahuko Naraha. After making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force and according to a specific method. As a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. So, very quick context leading up to today's verse. Dhruva Maharaj's pastime culminated in Dhruva Maharaj attaining the pole star. Subsequent to that pastime, the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj were described. As part of that, the whole lineage, the whole pedigree of Dhruva Maharaj was outlined with names and personalities. One personality out of that was King Anga. King Anga was a very good king and he had a wife whose name was Sunita. Together, they begot a son whose name was Vena, about who this whole story is, story of King Vena, which is the title of chapter 14. King Vena was a difficult child right from birth. Despite several efforts of Maharaj Anga to subdue King Vena and teach some etiquette, some discipline, some character, some compassion to King Vena, nothing worked. From his very childhood, King Vena was so cruel that he had no qualms in killing even his friends just for the sake of pleasure. We find many times serial killers, they have no remorse of having killed 20 killings, 25 killings, and still they go on and on, and after they are captured they say, you know, I don't have any remorse for that, I just enjoyed the whole process. So King Vena was that kind of a person, a psychotic kind of a character. So absolutely he was in Maharaj Anga had no control over this kind of a son. In frustration, Maharaj Anga left the house and went to the forest. He just gave up everything, gave up all hope of being able to do anything with such a son. And then the kingdom did not have there was no king to rule over. So the sages decided that rather than have anarchy in society as a result of the society not having a leader, better have King Vena on the throne. So they established King Vena on the throne. But when King Vena took the throne, the problem got worse. Okay. The anarchy still remained. Of course, there was little bit of, Prabhupada mentioned that the rogues and thieves were a bit subdued. Because sometimes negativity can be cut with more negativity. So King Vena was such a ruthless person that even the rogues and thieves were very scared of him. So little bit of that part was there. But the biggest damage that King Vena was doing was that he was not respecting the Brahminical layer. The duty of a king is to promote Krishna consciousness, to promote yajñas in society, to respect the Brahmanas. King Vena was exactly the opposite. He stopped all Brahminical activities. On top of that, he said there is no need for doing all these Brahminical activities. There is no need for worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gave philosophy also on top of that, saying that it is known that the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides within the body of a king. So this is called as using a philosophy like that. In fact, yesterday only we were discussing about Maharaj Parikshit pastimes in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, where it is said that the king has got this bhav called as Ishwara bhav. The correct meaning of Ishwara bhav means that the king has this mentality that he is a representative of God, the bhava of Ishwara, of having to protect his citizens. So it is more from a responsibility, not a privilege point of view, that it is mentioned in those purports. But leaders like King Vena misuse the Shastric quotations from here and there just for their own, to meet their own nefarious purposes. So King Vena was like that. So he stopped all kinds of yajna. And obviously, this came into the attention of the Brahmanas and they said, enough is enough now. So, by the power of their mantra shakti, they killed King Vena. But when they killed King Vena, again the kingdom returned back to anarchy. Again the rogues and thieves started roaming around and flourishing. So one problem solved, another problem came up like that. So now the king has, now the kingdom is left without any king. So now they are trying to come up with some other innovative solution for this. And today's verse is, after making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force and according to a specific method. As a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born from King Vena's body. So we'll see why they are doing, why they chose King Vena's body, and then why this process. We'll get into some details in this class. Now, essentially, before we specifically speak on this verse, there are a few generic lessons that we learn from this whole section of Srimad Bhagavatam. First is Maharaj Anga. Maharaj Anga, what is the lesson we learn? Is that when things at a point in life for all of us will come to a stage where nothing is in our control. This is something common to all of us. It is going to happen to all of us. Okay. It will happen in different ways to all of us. Okay. Depending upon our own karma and depending upon how Krishna wants to detach us from this material world. But it will happen. Okay. Once the names of the Lord are chanted, then the Lord is even more determined than we are that we go back to Him. So He is definitely going to make this material world lesser and lesser enjoyable for all of us. And He will have His own way of detaching us. So, in Maharaj Anga's case, he used the sun as a reason. So, how to utilize situations in our life, how to handle disappointments in our life, and take those disappointments as a blessing to go back to Godhead. Yesterday we were discussing in Maharaj Parikshit's past time, one of the reasons why Maharaj Parikshit is extra special and very glorious is because he was a person who was saved in the womb of his mother. So everyone knew that he is Lord Krishna's special child. Right from the womb, Lord Krishna protected him. There was no way Lord Krishna wouldn't have protected him from the bite of the serpent. When a Brahmastra could not kill him, what can a serpent, no, material serpent kill him? So, but still, he did not go looking around for a medicine for the snake bite. Rather, he took that as an opportunity to dedicate the rest of his life full time for Krishna consciousness, to surrender to Sukadeva Goswami and hear Srimad Bhagavatam and perfect his life. He never tried to counter that curse. So, this is the quality of a great devotee of the Lord. So, Anga also utilized that. Similarly, we see Vidura also. When Vidur was spoken with, dealt very harshly by Duryodhan, he took that as an opportunity to leave the palace and go on pilgrimage. So, we see great personalities from time to time, how they deal with adversity in their life. So, that is one lesson we get from this pastime. The next is, it talks about how important it is for a society to have a leader. Without a leader, the situation is called as anarchy. The whole idea of anarchy means, anarchy is a word which means absence of a leader. Complete lawlessness. So, this section tells us how important a leader is. How important leader is to society. I was going through a few days back around Somalia. Somalia is one of the countries which has had anarchy. So, and now recently only the government has been established, last few years. Okay. So, it's now I think called as Republic of Somalia or something like that. But Somalia and you know, its capital, Mogadishu, you know, these places, absolute anarchy in the sense that people did not know what to look forward to in life. Every day you get up, you don't know whether you will be alive. You don't know whether your children who go out on the streets will come back even alive. That was the situation in Somalia. Absolutely, there was no government. So there is no, if there is a government, at least somebody is there to look at after basic things. Food, water, shelter, education, hospitalization. Somebody is there at least. Infrastructure, health. But in the absence of a leader, Nobody is there to take bottom line for these things in society. So therefore, this is such a situation begets lawlessness. It was mentioned that in Somalia exactly this kind of situation happened. Rogues and thieves started controlling the country. People used to plunder. Drug abuse started. It was used for so much of illicit trade. Women were exploited, forced into prostitution. So many things happened. Absolute chaos. So therefore, this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brahmanas there realized that in the absence of a king, better to have a king like King Vena rather than have no king at all, because at least some rogues and thieves will be afraid of King Vena, because he is a better rogue and thief than them. So that is another thing that we learn. The third thing we learn from this pastime is how important is the need for a trained spiritual leader to be there in society. So there are three lessons. We talked about Anga, detachment, using an opportunity to detach. Second was how important a leader is for society. And the third is how important is that leader, what is a spiritual leader to society, who is spiritually realized personality. So here in these sections, it has been underscored by Srila Prabhupada that a society needs a Krishna conscious leader. Why? Because it is a leader who is responsible for establishing and upholding shared values within society. What is the highest shared value in society? Going back to Godhead. Developing love of Godhead. That is the highest shared value in a society. Because everything, all morality, law, systems, policies, strategies, everything comes from that single shared value. That the goal of human life is to develop love for Godhead and go back, and not to rot in this material world in the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. Now, who but for a devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord, can really uphold and enforce this shared value, or can inspire people to abide by this shared value in society, but for a spiritually realized leader who leads by his own example, like Lord Ramachandra led. He led by his own example, Maryada Purushottam, how to deal with elders. So Lord Ramachandra showed us how to live in this material world, what is culture, what is cultured behavior. But at the end of the day, Lord Ramachandra, Supreme Personality of Godhead, took the onus on himself to attract people back to Godhead. So, in the absence of such a spiritually enlightened leader, just having a leader, for the sake of having a leader, can at best lead a society to the mode of goodness. At best. Nowadays, if you see the leaders, okay, some mode of goodness may be there, here and there. There are some traces of mode of goodness. Sometimes they come up, here and there. But largely it is mode of passion and ignorance, which the current social leaders have been able to give to society. For example, even if you go to work on a Monday morning, you are hammered with this message, okay, that people have to get cut, replace people with robots. This is what is going on in today in the industry. Try to cut, they call it as FTE optimization, cut the full time equivalents. Okay. We are given targets. We are given targets actually. If we have to survive, especially the people who are in the information technology line, if we have to survive, the way of surviving is by cannibalizing our own business and by cutting people and replacing people with robots. They call it as robotic process automation. Right? So the world is going towards that. On the other hand, if this continues, how are people going to have jobs in society? How are people going to feed? People are sitting on big loans, right? Greed is not going down. People have taken debt more than they can service, and the industry is going exactly the opposite way of job loss. So God knows where all this is going to end. God knows where all this is going to end. That is why it is said, Tatascha anudinam dharmam satyam shaucham samadaya kalena balina rajan nangshati ayumanam smriti. Everything is going to go down in Kali Yuga. So A spiritually enlightened leader does not encourage his praja, does not lead the praja towards industrialization. Because a spiritually enlightened leader knows that it is agriculture and cow protection which is the basis of a good economy. Whereas the modern day leaders do not know that. So therefore it's quite the opposite. So agriculture is going down. I was hearing a class by His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj where he was mentioning that agriculture is depleting so rapidly that soon there will be no farmers who will work, there will be no independent farmers. The big companies, the corporate giants are going to take over the farms and then they are going to exercise their monopoly on us. And then God knows what goes into your apple. What genetic modifications happen to fruits and what kind of diseases will come even by taking basic things like fruit and vegetables. Today people are realizing, not because of any morality, but at least for health reasons people are trying to abstain from meat. But tomorrow people will be forcefully abstaining from, at least people have already become vegan. Tomorrow people, there will be some new term, fruitan or something like that, where people will say, no, I can't even eat fruits. Because fruits will give you, some kind of terrible diseases. So, leaders have this responsibility to reinstate cow protection as well as agriculture. Maharaj was also telling in the class that the cow today is separated from the calf at the very birth. And therefore, the cow is under terrible stress. And so is the calf. If a mother is separated from the child, you can imagine what is the state of a mother, right? On top of that, the calf is killed within 3 to 4 days. If it's a bull, it is killed immediately. It is seen as a burden to society. And then the cow is milked, the cow is injected with lot of chemicals so that it can give more milk. The cow is milked not with the hand with love, but it is milked using mechanized equipment to the extent that the cow bleeds and the blood of the cow goes into our so-called milk that we buy from all these shops, right? So Maharaj was mentioning all these things. It was really an eye-opener for all of us. Of course, some devotees have taken up this project and now we have this project of mother cow milk. So devotees, there has been an overwhelming response from the devotee community. Almost everyone has decided, mostly in the congregation, people have now stopped buying this pura milk and all those milks which are available from the shelves. And now people are taking to mother cow's milk. Because at least there is some devotees have taken this onus on themselves to fund the farmers back for taking care of the calf as well as the bull. And of course, the milk will be slightly expensive because of that. But definitely as devotees, if somebody is working on this and if we still do not consume that mother's cow's milk, then obviously, what is the point in we calling ourselves as devotees? We are preaching something and doing something else. So, and our temple has been extremely supportive of this project. In fact, we have had a vending machine where mother cow's milk is being stocked upstairs. So anybody coming to the temple can partake of this milk. So ISKCON per se, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, definitely ISKCON is going in the right direction and we have, all our leaders are promoting this cause of cow protection. And this is the this is one of the symptoms of spiritually enlightened leadership. Otherwise, but for spiritual enlightenment, the leaders will only lead us towards mode of passion and ignorance with their false idea of a growing economy. Now, this is the third lesson. So we talked about Maharaj Anga, how to utilize adversities. We talked about the need for a leader. That's one lesson. We talked about why a spiritually enlightened leader is required in society. The fourth lesson that comes out of this is how compassionate are these Brahmanas. Just imagine the lengths to which these people are going to. Now they are trying to churn Maharaj Vena's body. They can say to hell with it. It's not our problem anymore. Right? But they are not saying that. They are persisting. This is the nature of compassion. Their compassion is endless. They are still trying to get a solution out. Taking the ownership on themselves. They are not saying,
administration is the rule of the king. Therefore, as Brahmanas, we have done our job of killing Maharaj Vena. We have nothing more to do. Let us focus on our own Nirjan Bhajan. So this is the mood of Brahmanas. This is the compassionate mood of a Brahmana. So that is the fourth lesson we see. How Brahmanas are very compassionate. When Brahmanas stop becoming compassionate, the whole society then collapses. Because Brahmanas, Prabhupada has time and again mentioned that Brahmanas are the think tank of society. When Kali actually entered, the first layer it chopped off is the Brahminical layer. So when Brahmanas fall down, then every other Varna and Ashram falls down. So we see the compassion of Brahmanas. So they knew that when once, now Brahmanas, these Brahmanas are very very mature. On one hand, they have killed Vena by Mantra Shakti. But as I said before, after Maharaj Vena was killed, the rogues and thieves again started surfacing. But the Brahmanas here have taken a decision not to overdo their job. They could have killed rogues and thieves also by their Mantra Shakti. But they are exercising here, they are not overdoing their job. They are saying, our job is to get a good leader for society. Our job is not administration. So they are not overdoing, getting into all administrative details. Now how do we kill each and every rogue and thief in society? So they stop there. Rather, they are trying to do this process of churning Vena's thighs, so that by this whole process, something is going to happen later and another leader is going to emerge out at the end of this whole process. Not immediately. Bahuka is not that leader. Okay. But eventually they are going to do something else and another leader is going to come, which is Prithu Maharaj. Okay. So this is the compassion of a Brahmana. They are persisting because they are really concerned about Loka Mangalam. The same mood, if the Brahmanas would not have been compassionate, the Srimad Bhagavatam wouldn't have been spoken. It would have been probably only spoken to Maharaj Parikshit. But who was there along with Maharaj Parikshit? The Brahmanas and the sages were there. And they were milking Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami said, Varyan Eshate Prashna. Your questions are glorious. Because it talks about Loka Mangalam. It talks about welfare of society. You people are genuine in your questions. You are not just asking a question to impress the audience or to show your knowledge or to expose the ignorance of the speaker, but your questions are very genuine, they are coming from the heart. Your questions have a sense of integrity. You people are compassionate. You people have genuine compassion for society, and you know that for this rotting society, the only solution is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you are churning me, so your questions are very glorious. So, but for these Brahmanas, the Srimad Bhagavatam would probably have been restricted to Maharaj Parikshit, like that. So today's verse speaks of is an example of the length to which these Brahmanas are going to get a good governance for the kingdom. So now you will appreciate what's going on in this verse. In one sense, let's read this verse. After making a decision, the saintly persons and sages churned the thighs of the dead body of King Vena with great force, and according to a method, as a result of this churning, a dwarf-like person was born. So it sounds a little bit mysterious. It is not conventional. It is not typical. Something atypical is happening here. So it's a very mysterious process. So I was thinking, what can I speak on this verse? There was nothing to speak on this verse beyond the fact that churning a body. So I thought, why don't I hear from someone who has got a scientific mindset? So I happen to hear, and by Krishna's mercy, I chanced upon Sadaput Prabhu's lecture. But he's a scientist. Okay. And personally, I was very poor in biology in school. Okay. That's why I never took. Not that if I was good, I would have got into medicine. Anyway, I was a donkey, but but still, I was very poor in biology. Okay. So, these kind of things, body and all that, it's not my area at all, absolutely. So, thankfully, I heard one of Sadput Prabhu's lecture. So, whatever I'm going to speak for the next few minutes is exactly what was spoken by Sadput Prabhu and how he very beautifully commented on this verse, giving the perspectives. So, Sadput Prabhu starts by saying that this this can be compared to the modern day process of cloning. Okay, human cloning, or cloning any species for that matter. And he said, this looks like the Srimad Bhagavatam's version of Jurassic Park, where the DNA of a dinosaur was taken, and I think they tried to put it in the body of a mosquito or something like that, Steven Spielberg's movie. Now he says that while that was a work of fiction, I'm not sure if such a thing is ever possible, he says that actually today people are experimenting something like that. He said they have chosen an animal which is called as the woolly mammoth. Now, I have never heard of this animal. Have you heard of this? Woolly mammoth? You heard of this? Okay, so I checked on Google, what is woolly mammoth? You can put Google and see. It looks like an elephant actually, but it has got huge tusks. It doesn't look like the conventional elephant which we have seen since our childhood. There is something very different about this elephant. Slightly different in structure, like that. So, a woolly mammoth. Now, he says that these woolly mammoths are still there in Siberia. Of course, they are dead. It's an extinct species. But because Siberia has got extreme cold, so they have found several parts of body of the woolly mammoth, and they are actually, scientists are finding this, the excavator, whatever you call them, archaeologists and whatever, they are finding this. So, they are trying to see if they can get some DNA out of these woolly mammoths and manipulate to produce another woolly mammoth. Something like that, churning and all that is going on. So, he says that, of course, he says that modern day cloning is a bit less ambitious. What they are trying to do is take from a dead person here in Srimad Bhagavatam and then try to clone. But he says modern day cloning is not come up to that. Though they are trying to experiment with some woolly mammoth, it's not mature. Modern day cloning relies on a live cell. That is where science is at this point in time. That's why Satputra Prabhu says they are less ambitious. So he says at the outside, what we need for cloning is a living cell from a body, living cell. And the idea is that every cell in this body has a DNA for that body. Okay, it's going to little become scientific. So, I'm trying to concentrate you also. Every living cell in the body has a DNA for that body, which is called as the hereditary material. So, if we can somehow take a cell from anywhere in that person's body, from anywhere in that living person's body, and trick that cell into thinking that it is a fertilized egg cell, then it will grow to form an embryo. And you have a new body, exactly same hereditary material as the old one. So in principle, it should look like the earlier one, and it should be the earlier one. Not only look like, it should be the earlier one. So it's not only form, nama, rupa, guna, everything should be there in this. It should look and be that person. Now, according to the principle that the living being is simply the body. Here, what is the premise of science? That the living being is simply the body. That's why Prabhupada at that time itself foresaw. He said, life comes from
life.
Okay, but here the premise is the living being is simply the body. So, according to the principle that the living being is simply the body, one will have to conclude that the cloned body is identical to the body of the original person. According to this principle, it is not a correct principle, but still. Except for changes, he says, brought about by environmental circumstances. A simple example. Somebody is cloned from an original person. But the original person has got, let's say, now again I have to bring karma here because we don't understand anything else. The earlier person has got some favorable external circumstance, which we call as karma. But the clone, who is supposed to look and be like that person, has not got those favorable circumstances. So eventually, they will never be the same. But at least to begin with, reference point zero, they are the same. So that is a point which Satputra brings up very nicely. So he says, except for changes brought about by environmental circumstances. Now, further he explains the process. How to do it? How the scientists are trying to do.
take an egg cell from the female. Take an egg cell from the female and replace the nucleus of the egg cell with the nucleus of the cell from the body you want to clone. So take the egg cell from female, take the body from a clone, cell from whatever you want to clone, and put it into that nucleus. Replace the nucleus from that cell. So once that nucleus is inside this egg cell, the egg cell, it is, nature is strict to think that it is a fertilized egg cell and proceeds to divide and form an embryo, he says. That is the idea. Of course, he says this idea has to be repeated hundreds of times before we get some, you know, real outcome. And then one is able to clone a sheep for a frog or something like that. But they say that they are still working on this technology. Scientists are still working on this. But something interesting is said. Ultimately, who is funding all these things? Why is all this being done? So he said the ultimate idea, the ultimate idea is to clone the perfect soldier. The ultimate idea is to clone the perfect soldier so you can create armies of zombies. You can create armies of zombies with appropriate level of obedience and bravery. Appropriate levels of obedience and bravery. So this is something completely beyond our realm of thinking, but this is what is, you know, Ugra Karma going today. The scientists are engaged in all these things. Coming back to the verse now, today's verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. The king Vena was not living, he was already dead. Okay, so here there is a different method of cloning which is happening. So it's very difficult to clone. So there is a very curious way in which this is being done. It's not akin to the method that the scientists are adopting. So there is a different method by which Bahuka comes out of this journey. And Sarput Prabhu says that this seems to be aligned with the doctrine of heredity, at least. Aligned with the doctrine of heredity. Because there is enough evidence here in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam that the sages wanted to get an offspring from the body of Vena because of his heredity. There was no other reason. Because of his heredity. Why? Because he was still, despite all his bad qualities, he still was genetically connected with Maharaj Dhruva. That's why they were doing all this. So they are trying to preserve the good genes, he says. Now this is not surprising, because yesterday again we were discussing in the Srimad Bhagavatam in our Bhakti Vaibhav class that it is mentioned that the Lord Krishna protected Maharaj Parikshit for two reasons. One was Bhaktavatsal, that he wanted to protect the womb of Uttara because she was a pure devotee. But another reason is given by Srila Prabhupada in that section, that this was to protect the lineage of the Pauravas, of the Purus. Great kings had come, including Bhishma and Yudhishthira and all this. So that has to be preserved. And that was another reason why Lord Krishna protected Maharaj Parikshit. So the principle of protecting the lineage or the heredity is something which Lord Krishna also espouses, that principle. So we see that. However, in Vena's case here, there was a problem. It was not very as simple as Puru and Bhishma, and because all of them are great kings. They were not asuras, right? But in Vena's case, there was a problem because the genes were contaminated because of his mother's side, Sunita. Because it is said that her mother was coming in the lineage of death personified. So Vena's hereditary was not exactly all pure. All was not very good. There was some contamination which was there. So he was in the line of Anga, but his mother was death personified. So because of that, by hereditary, it seems he took more on his mother's side than his father's side. So by that, right from childhood, Vena himself was death personified in one sense. As I mentioned before, he used to kill even his playmates right from childhood, and when he became a king, he had now the power also to do that. So he had just upped the ant, if you like. So Satputramu says that this has got therefore something to do with heredity. So a key question may come to our mind after this discussion. Can a person inherit certain personal tendencies towards sinful activity? Can a person inherit certain personal tendency towards sinful activity? Is there such a thing as inheritance of sin? That could be a question that can come. Now, so Satput Prabhu now mentions a Christian concept. He says the Christian concept is that everyone inherited sin in this world owing to the original sin of Adam and Eve for having eaten the forbidden fruit, he says. So, Srimad Bhagavatam seems to suggest that there is some principle of inheritance involved also in someone becoming sinful based on these sections. However, the method of dealing with such an inheritance is very peculiar, mysterious and curious in this section. And he says that if you look at modern biochemical techniques, you can imagine that if there were genes that have a bad effect. Satput Prabhu says that modern techniques could go in that direction. That if you have certain genes which you know somehow scientifically will give a bad effect, scientists will try to cut out those genes using molecular methods. So that the residue is only good genes. But in this case, he says sages are using a more dramatic technique. Producing another complete body of a living person. So, you understand what is going on? Scientists may try to eliminate the genes and produce a body with the residue. But here, sages are using the bad genes also to produce Bahuka. And then they will use the good genes to produce Prithu Maharaj and Archi. Now, who comes out of this? Bahuka comes out of this. This journey, which is the bad side of Vena. Genetical bad side of Vena. So, Bahuka, it is mentioned, somehow embodied the sinful aspects of Vena. At least to a large extent. So, it is said that he had politically incorrect facial features. Politically incorrect. I mean, seeing him, nobody will think this person can be our leader. Like that. Now, this is dangerous. This is a dangerous part. Because Bahuka had features which were not sattvic. It is also not a bad idea to look sattvic. If a leader always looks like a demon, then of course, Vaishnava can never be judged externally. But here, Bahuka was absolutely completely different. He was very unconventional in his appearance. So therefore, it is mentioned how his appearance was. It said that he had black skin, flat nose, very short legs and copper colored hair. So if someone comes like that in front of us, by default we will not get confidence on such a person. Right? So, as bad as it could get, Bahuka had one good quality. What is the good quality which Bahuka demonstrates here? When Bahuka appeared, the sages, in this kind of an appearance, when he appeared, the sages told him, sit down, sit down. And what is the word, Sanskrit word they used? Nishida. So they said, sit down. Nishida means, sit down. And Bahuka obeyed. He didn't say, why should I sit? He didn't start with that. Right? At least so. So one good quality amidst all these things in Bahuka. So, but eventually it is like that Bahuka therefore was given the responsibility of forming a society of Nishidas. Nishadas means what? People who are very third class, who are thieves and plunderers, who live in the remote areas of the forest. So as a result of this whole churning, what happened? All this poison culminated in a different, if I may say, sect of people who are rogues and plunderers in the forest. Now, it is said this came out because what was churned of Bahuka? The thighs were churned. And from the thighs, who will come out? Shudras will come out.
Okay. Of course, Shudra is still a very high word. Once I was hearing a lecture of one of my god brothers, Gaurang Prabhu, and he was saying, though yes, we say Kalo Shudra Sambhavaha, Shudra still have one quality of truthfulness. And he asked the audience, tell me the last time that you never lied. And not many people could raise their hands, even for the last 48 hours. They have not told even one single lie. Because 48 hours before we were in office. Our products, I told, remember last time also we discussed, our products are the best in class. We start with a lie. Everyone tells that, every company says, our products are the best world-class products. And we provide world-class services to our customers. We are completely customer-focused. It's a lie. Nobody is customer-focused. Everyone works for profits. Okay. So there is no possibility that we don't lie. So he says that Kala, Sabha, Shudra is also like, someone calls you Shudra, you should be very happy. Thank you very much. Very good compliment you have given me. Because Kali Yuga is worse than Shudra. What is that? Malechas, Yavanas and Chandalas. So coming back to Satpoth Prabhu, now he says further interesting things about this phenomenon. He says that it seems in this whole churning process, hereditary genes and all that, it seems that there is some subtle programming that existed within the body of Vena. Subtle programming, he uses the word. Subtle programming that existed within the body of Vena. So one can make that analogy to a computer virus. Now, he talks about computer virus, that inadvertently sometimes you download something from the, something gets downloaded from the internet. And some file gets activated as a result of that and erases your hard disk. So, Sadhguru Prabhu says that this virus is not made of any solid substance. It is not made of any solid physical substance. What is it? It is nothing but a pattern of electronic pulses at the end of the day. A certain pattern of electronic pulses which is ultimately generated is a virus, is the effect of a virus, a virus program. So a pattern of electronic pulses causing a computer to destroy itself. So why is he saying this? He is giving an analogy. He is giving an analogy that the sinful reactions is being equated here with some subtle pattern of programming in your body. This programming is done as a result, this programming itself is a manifestation of a sinful reaction because of past karma. So, sinful reaction is equated with some subtle pattern of programming which takes action within the body of a human being and produces very deleterious effects. So, by committing sins, we somehow activate, by committing sins in the past lifetime, we somehow activate these kind of programs. These programs, he says, may take a period of time to manifest their effects. Nonetheless, they are there and in due course, they will manifest. Which is not very different from the principle of Bijam Kutam that we studied in Nectar of Devotion. Originating from avidya, a tendency or a general proclivity towards sinful activities right from childhood. So this is being brought out, this analogy is very nicely brought out by Sadhguru Prabhu. So when Bahuka was created, what happened? When Bahuka was created, Prabhuji says that this subtle programming was transferred from Vena to Bahuka. So the virus was transferred from Vena to Bahuka. So he had to suffer the sinful reactions. Bahuka had to suffer the sinful reactions. And his entire race also, which came from the same subtle programming, had to suffer sinful reactions. Because the result of sin is not only punishment. The result of sin is also sinful tendency. So that is how it makes sense. The result of papam is not just aprarabdham. The result of papam is also bijam and kutam. So, some kind of subtle programming pattern was passed from one generation to another generation. So, these are certain observations that we see from this verse, specifically concerning Bahuka.
Now, it is mentioned that in the next phase, in the next phase of churning, this is phase 1 of the project, churning. In the next phase 2 of the project, they started churning the arms of Bahuka. Now they have churned the thighs of Bahuka. Later on they will churn the, arms of, the thighs of Vena. Then they will start churning the thighs of, the arms of Vena. Okay. Now the sinful part has been eliminated, that sorted out. All the garbage is gone out now from Vena. And the remaining bodily substance, now obviously the hypothesis or the assumption, not an assumption in one sense, because these were realized Brahmanas, they knew what they were doing. They knew that the rest of the part was pure and it would contain the pristine qualities of Dhruva Maharaj, preserved, coming as it is. So from that churning, we will see in the future that a male and a female were created. The male was Prithu Maharaj and the female was Archi, incarnations of Shakti Avesh Avatar. Both of them are called as Shakti Avesh, of Vishnu as well as Lakshmi. Now, Sadhutra says, this would be difficult in cloning. Scientists cannot do this. By whatever amount of experiment, we cannot invoke Godhead through mechanical experiments. Says. So in principle now, though, the scientists can do something. Like they are trying something in principle to produce male, female, all these things. He says, in principle, the scientists are trying to see what can be done. So he says, in principle, one can produce a female from a male body. In principle, one can produce a female from a male body. This is a hypothesis, that in principle this can happen. By taking two X chromosomes, copies from the male body, from the female body. The male, he says, now let me explain this. Okay. This is again my biology, I'm so bad. Essentially the male body has got X and Y chromosome, whereas the female body has got 2X chromosome.
Only X.
2X chromosomes, he says. Okay. 2X chromosomes and male has X and Y. So he says we can produce a female from a male body by taking that X chromosome. Like from the male body has got an X also. No? So like that you take two such X chromosomes from the male body. But he says that even if such a thing can be possible, okay, he says it will again have very bad effects. He says that nature also has made, ordained in such a way, and in Vedic culture it is said, like within the same family, you don't marry. Like a person should not marry the cousin or something like that. Okay, otherwise sometimes it's said that children will have mental challenges and whatever. So he says that even if this were to be possible, even if it is done, God knows what kind of effects this will have. Even if one succeeds in doing like that, what kind of creatures will come out of this, he doesn't know. But still the scientists are trying to experiment today on that. Now, coming back to the Srimad Bhagavatam part, in the future we will see the two great personalities, Prithu and Archi, are coming out. Because what is the essential problem statement that we are trying to solve here by all this experimentation? Not just scientific achievements, but what is the goal of the Brahmanas? The goal of the Brahmanas is that society should get a spiritually advanced leader. So we'll come back to that original loop where we were. So Prithu and Archi were produced as expansions of Lord Vishnu and Goddess Lakshmi Devi. So, and it is reiterated that they are not Vishnu Tattva, rather they are Shakti Avish expansions. And being Shakti Avish, both of them demonstrated godly qualities. Now, Prithu Maharaj is described, eventually we will see that what was Prithu Maharaj, one of the greatest achievements of Prithu Maharaj's life, to re-establish the principle of agriculture. So, Prithu Maharaj is described as the creator of organized city life. Agriculture and organized city life, not unorganized. creator of organized city life and the bringer of agriculture. Right? Now, something interesting Sadbhut Prabhu mentioned again. He said that when the Greeks came to India under Alexander the Great, when they came to India, they learnt about this Prithu Maharaj. Okay. And they said that this Prithu Maharaj is none other than one Greek god whose name is Dionysius. Am I pronouncing it right? D-I-O-N-Y-S-I-U-S. Dionysius. Because it is said in Greek mythology that Dionysius was born from the thigh of his father. And here also, Prithu Maharaj is born as such. And Dionysius, in Greek mythology, was considered as the creator of agriculture. He was the one who started agriculture. Therefore, I immediately googled Dionysius. And it is said that he is considered by the Greek as the god of grape harvest and wine making, etc. In another sense. It's coming like that. Okay. So, Dionysius was compared with Maharaj Prithu. And interestingly, Lord Krishna is compared with Hercules. Okay. And it is said, why is he compared? Because it is, they, according to them, they heard that Lord Krishna is very powerful. And he did superhuman feats. And he also killed, he also chastised the multi-hooded serpent called as Kaliya. So when they heard this, they said, hang on. This is Hercules. Because Hercules also beat up a multi-hooded serpent whose name was Hydra. Hydra is under the water. So the Greeks did all these comparisons. Okay. So to conclude this particular section now. So see, we saw various aspects, various lessons that we can take from this whole pastime. Summing up, we saw how Anga, Maharaj Anga, utilized an adversity that he could not do anything with his son. He just could not get his son back, but he used this adverse circumstance to give up his material life and retire timely. Second lesson, we saw how important it is for a society to have a leader. If a leader is not there, then there will be anarchy in society. Even mode of goodness cannot prevail, neither mode of passion. Third, we saw how important it is for a society to have a trained spiritual leader, because it's only a spiritual leader who will stand for shared values in society, the greatest shared value being that the goal of human life is to attain pure love of Godhead and to serve the Lord. Then we saw how the fourth lesson we get is how responsible the Brahmanas were, how compassionate they were, that they were always thinking of Loka Mangalam, welfare of the society. And then in today's world, we saw up to what great lengths the Brahmanas went to churn out the unwanted part from the body of Maharaj King Vena. And then not only stop at weeding out the bad part, but still continuing their responsibility of churning, so that society can get a realized leader like Maharaj Prithu, and then the goddess of fortune coming as Archi, Shakti Arch. So I'll stop the class here. If there are any questions or clarification, don't ask me questions or cloning, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Anything else you can ask? Yes, ma'am.
Their personality. What do you understand their personality?
I haven't heard any commentary regarding why Sunita is called as death personified. Just that she's coming in that lineage. Looks like she's probably the daughter of Yamaraj or something like that. But I don't know. Beyond that, I could not decipher from this section. If anyone else has, kindly share with us. Yes, ma'am.
It's not Yamaraj.
Not Yamaraj, no? Okay.
When in the beginning of this chapter, this canto,
yeah,
different sons were born of Brahma.
Mm-hmm.
One was fear, and other bad qualities, fear, he was also born.
Okay. So they have said death personified, but they have not said Yamaraj or anything. They have not said who her father was.
Mrityu,
death personified. Mrityu was, okay.
She comes from that lineage.
From that lineage.
When we speak about the things that are from lineage, like previous good lineage where it is coming from, we are also promoting Varnashrama, where you act according to your nature, right? So while doing it, like, okay, your grandson or grandfather was a king or something, we are also promoting nepotism.
We are also promoting
nepotism, you know.
Okay,
so how do we understand so that you should act according to your nature, and if you're not on your nature, then you can't be a king, but there's still promoting, okay, you know, because it is coming from lineage.
Yeah. So we had the same similar discussion yesterday in our Bhakti Vaibhav class. The question was asked a bit differently. We were discussing Maharaj Parikshit. So Varanam Maya Shishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. It's very clear from Bhagavad Gita that just because of a lineage does not in itself qualify someone to be called as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. So that is clearly there in the Bhagavad Gita. However, because a person is born in a Brahminical family does not mean that the lineage should be ruled out. Okay. For example, in the lineage, let's say Lord Nityananda, may be possible that great personalities have come. We cannot just rule out that. Another way of seeing it also is that when will you be born in a great lineage? Only if you have the required Sukriti for doing that. Not anyone will be born in any lineage. So whichever way you see it, you will see that it is not chance. There is a cosmic order that happens even in a lineage. And of course, the Lord also wants to establish the principle that virtue is not necessarily, you know, everything about lineage only. That also Lord wants to. So therefore, for example, a Prahlad Maharaj may come out from Hiranyakashipu. Okay. So both are true. So what we have to learn from this is that if someone is in a lineage of a, if someone is coming from a great lineage, we do offer our respects. But if we are born in that lineage, we don't get proud just because of our lineage. Rather, the lineage should be taken as a responsibility, not as a privilege. For example, in one sense, if you see, maybe not seminal lineage, but we are, in one sense, we are all under the lineage of the disciplic succession. Okay, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yara deke tara kaha Krishna upadesh. Amara agya guru hana tara yadesh. So are we not in the lineage of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes. Okay. So therefore that is a huge responsibility. So many times I have heard, you know, lot of Maharajas speaking this, that we have to be proud that we are a part of ISKCON, because ISKCON is a great society. The philosophy that we have, nobody has in this world. Right? So we have to be very proud in one sense, but not only proud, we also should conduct ourselves with a high sense of responsibility in society. So if we do that, then just because we are part of a lineage or so like that, then we are not carrying that with us. We are carrying the culture that is coming from that heritage, and we are living examples of that. If we could do that, then society will not just say that, oh, just because you are a devotee, you know, this is happening. It is because we are actually carrying those principles. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense?
We can say from Vena that he was not accepted as a king, although he came from the king, yeah. Proper king, so they did not accept him, but they looked for someone who is qualified.
Absolutely.
And that one is.
Yeah, very good example. Thank you. Yes.
So the dwarf has come out from King Vena's body. And King Vena already must have taken another birth, or probably. So how does karma work now? The dwarf gets the karma of what King Vena did?
That's a difficult question. Probably I'll ask Prana Prabhu to. What karma that Renha took from the Rasmaran, please?
Just read the end of the
papad. Read the end of the papad. Same papad?
Yeah.
One should not think that it was impossible for another body to come out of the dead body of Maharaj Vena. This was performed by the skillful action of the sages.
Well, he said that the soul is different than the body. The soul is individual. It's not. It's conditioned by material nature, but it is separate from material nature. So the soul of King Vena, Krishna arranges the conditions for each individual soul to come back to him. Sorry.
No, thank you, Mataji. Thank you. So again, just adding to what Mataji said, this is something in Science of Centralization. Prabhupada writes that the soul actually, when the soul leaves one body and goes to another body, then the soul carries the karma. Mm-hmm. The subtle body goes along. So with that logic, and I will be corrected by all the seniors here, that with that logic, we can conclude that Vena still went with his subtle body. With his inclinations, he has gone to another body. So, but some bad part apparently was churned and thrown from this body. Yeah. And beyond that, what can we say? This is very mysterious. It's not easy, at least for me. That's why I said at the very outset, it's very difficult. So I had to really look for Sadhguru Prabhu who saved me today. Otherwise, I was thinking, what will he speak in this class? But to that extent only, it is my limitation to only explain up to this point. Beyond that, I don't know. Unless someone can throw more light on that. So Vena went with his own karma, in short. But some part of from the body, whatever could be churned out, was churned out as Bahuka. And the good part became Prithu and Archie. That's all we can say.
I just remember now what class that name Maharaj gave, that so it's kind of an astronomy people that in the process now harvesting organs and passing it from one person to another.
Mm-hmm.
So like what is can come with that, you know, it's like about science and technology seems very happy about that today. Like if he was kind of making a point on that, like also what subtle things can come when one can get an organ from another body. As you said, it's a very complex thing that we can't really just sort of, but it could be considered.
Okay. So was Maharaj saying that when an organ transplant happens, even the subtle tendencies of a person could change?
Yeah, that could
okay.
be considered.
It will change.
I was thinking even with the blood transfusion, it's really dodgy because it's strange because you know when Bhishma, you know, because he was he said that when he was pierced with the arrows, his blood spilled, and he said he got purified because his blood was contaminated because he was getting maintained by Duryodhana.
Mm-hmm.
With blood, I was just thinking with blood transfusion, what you get if you get transfusion.
Therefore, simply chant Hare Krishna and be happy. What can we do? It's a complicated one. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.